on this wonderful day of January 18th in 2007. I'm delighted to be co-chairing our first joint health care committee, and I'll turn it over to Representative Greenlink to open his committee.
I open the House Health Care Committee. Congress hearing. Madam Senator, do you want to start a brief comment? Did you have?
Okay. Actually, no.
Okay.
We're ready to hear Senate Bill 31, which is virtually a mirror image of your bill, House Bill 2001.
We'll open a hearing on House Bill 2201. There is overflow in hearing room D, so if anybody can't get in here, you'll be able to follow proceedings in hearing room D. And our first witness this morning will be Senator Lori Montes Anderson. And while she's moving to her seat, let me just say how important I think this hearing is, how much we owe the governor for bringing it forward to us, how every society is known by how it treats its least fortunate, and how we will be taking the first step today to remove what's basically a blot on our society, the fact that we have more than 100,000 children without access to health care because they don't have health insurance. I thank all these wonderful committee members for being here today. Senator?
Thank you, Chair Greenlink and members of the committee. I am truly honored to be here today. I take a look at the parents and the nurses and the many other concerned Oregonians behind me, and we are all willing to speak out about the challenge we are facing. The significance of this legislation is incredible. What we all are considering today represents the opportunity to work together, confront the challenge, and make sure every child in Oregon has access to affordable health care. 20 years ago, I started out as a public health nurse working with at-risk children. Most of them did not have health insurance. I saw firsthand how devastating it can be for children when they don't get the care that they deserve. At that time, I never dreamed that I might someday come to the legislature and be in a position to change public policy to help those children. Yet today, I have that opportunity, and it is difficult for me to express how fortunate I feel. No matter how long I serve in the legislature and what else I may accomplish, my work on this issue will truly represent the most rewarding chapter in my entire political career. Healthy kids isn't just legislation for me. It's the fulfillment of a personal mission that led me to become a nurse in the first place. And I can think of no other issue I would rather spend my energy and time on. That's what I and others have been doing for the last year and a half. And the legislation you have before you today is the product of that collaborative effort. Throughout the 2006 interim, the Senate Committee on Children's Health Care worked closely with the governor, the Medicaid Advisory Committee, and legislators from both parties to develop and refine the Healthy Kids Plan. We held numerous hearings and considered multiple bill drafts, and ultimately we reached consensus that met our fundamental goal, finding a practical way to guarantee affordable health care for all children in Oregon. Other witnesses will testify at greater length about all of the details of the plan, but I would like to highlight a few key points. First, the Healthy Kids Plan will help thousands of working families who are falling through the cracks in our current health care system. These families don't make enough money to pay for the high price of private insurance for their children, but they make too much to qualify for the state and federal health programs. Working families should be able to pay for their children's medical care without worrying that it's going to push them to the brink of bankruptcy. And the Healthy Kids Plan will help relieve that burden. Another key component of the plan is that it streamlines and simplifies the enrollment process for families. This is essential because half of the uninsured children in Oregon are already eligible for programs but are not enrolled. Children should never be denied essential health care because of unnecessary paperwork and bureaucracy. The Healthy Kids Plan directly addresses that problem by knocking down the barriers to coverage and simplifying that process. Finally, the plan is fiscally responsible. It uses the power of pooling to lower costs, and it maximizes the use of federal matching funds. In fact, for every dollar that we invest in this program, we will get $3 back from the federal government. Of course, while we've done everything we can to make the plan as cost-effective as possible, nothing is ever free, and guaranteeing coverage for 117,000 children in Oregon will not be free either. We will need to raise our tobacco tax to the same level as Washington State to fully fund the program. But I think you'll agree with me that the investment is worth it to keep our kids healthy and safe. And the truth is, we will save money in the long term if we take care of our children today. Fortunately, we are joined today by a number of Oregon leaders who are committed to taking care of our children. And one of those individuals is our governor, who has done more than anyone else to raise the profile of this issue. I am honored and excited that he's joining us this morning. His presence at this joint hearing sends an unmistakable message that we stand united, the legislature and the governor, in our commitment to putting children, Oregon children, at the very top of our agenda. And let me close by quoting the governor, who likes to say that an investment in the health of our children is an investment in Oregon's future. And he's right. Healthy kids are learning kids, and learning kids are the key to a strong economy and a prosperous future. For the sake of that prosperous future, I urge you to support the Healthy Kids Plan and help us fulfill our moral obligation to take care of all of Oregon's children. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. I'll be chairing today's joint committee. Senator Manus Anderson will be chairing Wednesday. So we now call the governor, who's taken a moment from his busy schedule to accept our invitation to testify. He won't be taking any questions because of time, but we'll have lots of time in Wednesday's hearing to explore things that meet your curiosity with the governor's staff.
Thank you, Representative Greenlick and Senator Manus Anderson, members of the House and Senate health care committees. Let me just, for the record, I am Governor Ted Kulongoski, and it is indeed an honor for me to be here with all of you. Let me just begin, before I begin my formal remarks, to thank each and every one of you for your commitment to make health care more affordable, more accessible, and more effective for all Oregonians. Your positions on these two committees and your commitment, each and every one of you, your efforts in the past are the best testimony for the opportunity before us. All of us, and I say that literally, all of us have been working for years to create this moment. When we had the opportunity to begin to apply the resources and leadership of our state to repair, improve, and expand our health care system, I urge all Oregonians to help us to make the most of this opportunity. As we all know, our health care system is failing us in many ways. Its worst failure is numbered in the tens of millions of Americans and the hundreds of thousands here in Oregon whom it treats as what I refer to as outsiders. I use the term outsiders because these people are largely unseen except when they arrive at emergency rooms in hospitals and in our health care clinics. And when they access our system, our health care system, they are very likely to be sick, more sick than others, to get less care than others, and to pay more for health care when they get it than those who are the card-carrying members of our health care system. The outsiders who don't have those insurance cards number more than 600,000 in Oregon. They are our neighbors and our friends, our colleagues, and to many of us, our customers. They don't talk about being uninsured except when they hope what never will happen happens. And that's when we are reminded that they are more vulnerable than the rest of us, both physically and financially. And worst of all, 117,000 of these outsiders in Oregon are children. These children are less likely to get preventive health care services, less likely to get medical or dental care when they need it, and less likely to learn and thrive in school and as they grow up. Most of these 117,000 children live in families with one or more working adults. Let me say that again. Most of these 117,000 children live in families with one or more working adults. In all but a few exceptional cases, these children are not neglected. They are children of our working families whose parents are struggling to make ends meet and whose employers are either unable or unwilling to pay for health insurance for their employees' children. And so their children become outsiders also, whose development becomes less certain, whose progress becomes less sure, and whose very lives become more vulnerable. It is a tragedy to have children live without access to health care when there is little we can do about it. But it is worse when we can do something about it and we choose not to do so. This is the moment at which we have that choice. I want to again thank the leadership of Senator Mona Sanderson, who has introduced a similar bill in the Senate. Thank you again to Representative Greenlick, who chairs this House committee. I want to thank Representative Kotek, who co-chaired our Medicaid Advisory Committee and held hearings on this subject across the state. And I want to thank all of those in this building who are in the legislature, and there are a number of you who this issue has been at the top of your list, both physical and mental health care for all children. And I want to thank you all. I want to specifically thank the Oregon Nurses Association because they have been a tremendous force behind this effort on all of the people I just acknowledged. That they've been partners with us, and I'm very, very grateful for all that they have done. We collectively, and Senator Mona Sanders said this, and I want to emphasize this, that we collectively have developed a proposal that can bring those 117,000 children into our health care system. Our Healthy Kids Plan is sensible, responsible, and practical. Sensible because it uses federal funds for children's health care that we are currently leaving on the table in Washington, D.C. Currently, as I said, we are leaving tens of millions of dollars unclaimed in the federal budget every year because we are not using all of the matching funds for children's health care that the federal government has set aside for us. For every new dollar that you commit to health care for children from lower-income families, there's at least another $1.50 available from the federal government to purchase health care services in our economy. Our proposal claims every penny of that money for Oregon children. Further, about half of the 117,000 uninsured children are already eligible for free enrollment in the Oregon Health Plan, but we have not aggressively reached out to them and their parents, which means we have not signed them up for the health care program because if they did in the past, we would not have had the money to pay our share of that coverage. Our proposal pays for coverage for every one of these children with a dollar from our own resources and $1.50 from the federal government. In addition, we make it easier for families to enroll their children in the Healthy Kids Plan and easier to keep them enrolled. Second, our proposal is responsible. When working families can afford to pay a portion of their health care cost, it is reasonable to ask those families to do so. But it is also reasonable for us to help those families by supplementing their payments to make coverage available to their children when they can't pay all of that cost. This is the principle of shared responsibility that forms our proposal. It is important to meet the needs of the poorest among us, as many of our social programs are designed to do. but it is equally important to match the efforts of middle-class working families who often earn just a little too much to qualify for help from their government. Some 50,000 of Oregon's uninsured children are in families who earn between $40,000 and $80,000 a year. We can meet them halfway and put health care for their children within their reach. Third, our proposal is practical. It is one thing to cover children. It's another thing to make sure they get care. Our Healthy Kids Plan does both. It will provide a common health insurance card to every enrolled child, and it will expand our school-based health centers and bring more dental sealant services to children in their schools. Your revenue committees heard testimony from my staff last week about how to fund this plan, and you will hear more from my advisors on Wednesday on the details of how we plan to administer it. I'd like to close with these final points. One, like you, I am committed to a long-term permanent solution to our health care crisis that provides affordable health care for all Oregonians and for all Americans. That is a noble goal. But it is a goal that requires far more complicated and difficult solutions than the proposal before you today. We must not let our pursuit of that larger goal distract us from enacting this proposal. And we must not keep our children waiting any longer. I am not suggesting that we abandon one goal to pursue another. We can move forward on both paths. I believe that if we can cover all children, we can eventually cover all adults. There is no conflict in our purposes here. We can do this for our children and make real progress on the road to health care for all. But if we fail with a proposal that is sensible, responsible, and practical as this one, I fear that we will end up no better off than we are now, with a growing number of outsiders among both the children and adults of our working families who are denied the health care that they need to grow and thrive and be productive members of our society. Let me again close by just telling you, let's do this for our children. We're the adults in this society. It is our responsibility to look out for the health and well-being of our children. We can end the tragedy of 117,000 Oregon children whose futures are more vulnerable because they have become outsiders in our health care system. We can bring them inside, give them care when they need it, protect their health, and help them thrive and grow. Let us not fail to act on this opportunity. Let us not turn our backs on our children. Again, I appreciate your efforts to address our growing health care crisis, and I thank you for talking up our Healthy Kids Plan at the start of this legislative session. I look forward to seeing this plan move forward through both chambers so that we can bring affordable health care to all of our children. Again, thank you very, very much for giving me this opportunity to be before you, and as I said in the beginning, I truly believe you and I have the same commitment to providing health care for all of the kids in Oregon. Thank you very, very much, Mr. Chairman. Both chairmen.
Governor, thank you very much for coming. We appreciate your leadership on this issue. And get your pens ready. We'll be moving over to you.
I like to hear that, sir. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
We have a phone call. Next.
Yes, please.
Intention here is to hear from Sarah Bacon next. It's our phone.
She's very confused.
You have 144.
It's a long distance hour. She's on her break. I don't either. Go ahead. You want to go and look at our coat?
One more time, please. Why don't you try and get on the phone and tell her what's going on? Madam Co-Chair?
Good morning. For the record, my name is Tina Kotek. I am state representative for House District 44. It's my personal pleasure to be here today, having worked as an advocate for so many years on kid and family issues. It's a very exciting day for the state of Oregon. Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, fellow House committee members, and Senate colleagues, I come before you this morning to express my full support for House Bill 2201. As you know, this bill would implement a comprehensive plan to provide health insurance coverage to every child in Oregon. And it's the culmination of 12 months of very hard work, of research, of discussion, of public input. I would like to thank Governor Kulongowski and Senator Montes Anderson for their leadership on this proposal and bringing this legislation to fruition. I'd also like to thank the members of the state's Medicaid Advisory Committee for their hard work in formulating the policy framework that helped the governor create his vision to provide health insurance for every child in the state. As the former co-chair of the Medicaid Advisory Committee, I would also like to thank all the citizens, and there were very many, who provided thoughtful and invaluable feedback on the plan as the committee held public forums around the state. This is a plan that has been well discussed, and it's now time to act on it. We have a clearly defined problem, as the previous two speakers have talked about, and we have an achievable solution to that problem that we have before us today. I hope you agree with me that it is completely unacceptable that any child in our state does not have access to quality health care. Unfortunately, yet today in our communities around the state, many children go without health care because they simply lack health insurance. Every day there are 117,000 uninsured children in Oregon. Their healthy development, their success in school, not to mention the financial stability of their families, are in severe jeopardy because they lack health insurance. My friends, the Oregon legislature has a moral obligation to make sure every child in the state has health insurance. It's important not only for the children, for their future, their healthy future, but for the future health of our state. The Healthy Kids Plan, as outlined in 2201, again, as I mentioned, is an achievable solution to this problem. Not only will the plan reduce administrative barriers and actually provide funding for outreach to reach those 60,000-plus low-income children who are already currently eligible for the Oregon Health Plan, but it will also provide hope to thousands of children in middle-class families, working families whose parents simply do not earn enough to provide coverage. As the escalating cost of family health insurance thwarts the best intentions of our employers as well as the needs of parents, the Healthy Kids Plan will provide the private-public partnership necessary to help parents cover their children. 91% of Oregon's uninsured children have at least one working parent. The troubling reality is that families earning between $40,000 and $80,000 a year can simply not afford health insurance. Whether there's no employer-sponsored coverage available or the premiums are just too expensive to afford, the bottom line is that children suffer. When parents are forced to choose between other basic necessities, such as covering their costs for housing, and important things like health insurance. Too many working families are falling through the cracks. They make too much money to qualify for our current public health programs, but they make too little to pay for a private health plan. We need to support working families and their children. Healthy Kids does just that with affordable and predictable premium cost sharing based on family income. When enormous medical debt, which often leads to personal bankruptcy, is a stark reality for many families in this state, we cannot continue to undermine the financial security of our families. Healthy Kids is a way to protect working families from that financial instability. To people listening today who may think this is not their problem, either because their child is covered already or they don't have any children of their own, I would ask them to remember that this is everyone's problem. Uninsured children are much less likely to receive preventive care that they need to stay healthy. Uninsured children sit side by side insured children every day in the classroom, at daycare, any place that children are. And unfortunately, they experience the health consequences of being next to folks who have not had access to care. A virus or an infection doesn't care if a child has insurance. That child sitting next to a child who doesn't have care will get sick, and that affects every child in the state. Children without insurance are also most likely to receive or have their care in an emergency room or to have to be hospitalized for conditions that have gone untreated. And that means more expense, not only to the healthcare system, but to everyone, because we know that the costs of covering the uninsured are shifted to those who do have health insurance coverage. Every one of us is affected by this problem. Therefore, it is our collective responsibility to deal with it. In closing, the Healthy Kids Plan will ensure access to affordable, comprehensive health insurance for all of Oregon's uninsured children. It's that simple. It's a straightforward plan. It's a smart plan. And we owe it to our state's children to give them the best foundation possible for a healthy and successful life. You will hear compelling testimony this morning and probably the rest of the week from parents whose children have suffered due to a lack of health insurance. We have the authority and the opportunity to keep these stories from repeating themselves. To allow children to suffer from preventable and treatable illness is simply unconscionable. I hope you share this conviction. I hope you will support House Bill 2201 and not only support it but champion it as we get going from the House to the Senate to the governor's signature. Thank you, and I'd be happy to take questions.
Can we just hold a moment before you take questions? We're going to try and make that phone call one more time. We have a witness waiting on a break, so we're going to see if we can... I'm going to try one more time.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, ma'am.
I think it's important for the audience to know that we're trying to reach Sarah Bacon, and she is working. She's on her break. We're trying to call her cell phone, and she did lose a child due to a lack of health insurance, and this is why we feel it's so critical for her to give her testimony today. So we're going to be trying again.
This is Sarah.
Sarah, this is Senator Laurie Monis Anderson, and I'm here with Representative Rich Greenlee. Thanks so much for taking time out of and giving up your break to speak with us.
Thank you for having me.
We're with the House members and the Senate members, and then a room full of people that want to hear you talk. So would you just go ahead and give us your story?
Okay. One evening in early 2001, I took my 14-month-old daughter, Molly, who had been fighting a cold for a few weeks, into the emergency room because she was vomiting. I was young. I was only 22. But I did know that children with colds didn't vomit. And after a 2-hour wait, we finally made it into an examination room. The doctor asked me if we had insurance, and we didn't. The doctor ordered a chest x-ray and a breathing treatment for Molly, gave her a prescription for an ear infection, and sent her home. Her oxygen saturation level, which had dropped to 84% during our visit, had risen to 95%, and he decided that there was nothing more he could do for her. Molly and I went home with aftercare instructions that told me to take her to a pediatrician if she got worse. Well, Molly didn't get worse, but she didn't get better either. 5 days later, Molly had a seizure, went into cardiac arrest, and spent 24 hours hooked up to a ventilator while tests were run to make sure that she was, in fact, brain dead. We spent another 24 hours waiting for the organ procurement team to prepare to harvest her organs. While she was under the care of the procurement team, she was tested for respiratory syncytial virus. It came back positive. It was also found that she'd had a bleed in her brain for at least a week, maybe even 10 days. That was what caused the vomiting the night we went to the ER. Molly didn't have insurance. I was a single mom, and I worked as a server at a high-end restaurant. This had afforded us too high of an income to qualify for the state insurance program. Every month, I would scrape together the money needed for her well-baby checkups and immunizations, and I would often eat only one meal a day so that I could afford healthy food and quality medical care for Molly. I believe my daughter did not get all the tests she needed to keep her with us because she didn't have insurance. It's just that simple. This day and age, it's unnatural to bury your child. When a child dies, it doesn't just affect the parents and the grandparents, the aunts and the uncles. It affects every person that ever knew the child and every person those people will ever meet. My sister, father, and I have all moved to new cities, and we've tried to start new lives. It will be 7 years since her death next month, and we're still haunted by the memory of a child who didn't turn 7 in December and the $432 test that would have made it possible to avoid the 6-year anniversary that will occur a month from tomorrow. And I'm dying.
You're doing fine, Sarah.
Okay, and I'm finished.
You said you're finished?
I'm finished.
Okay. Thank you so very much. We hope... We know what a difficult time it was for you to just speak about this, and our heart goes out to you, Sarah, and hopefully this will never happen ever again after we pass this legislation to another child. A parent shouldn't have to go what you went through.
Yeah, please pass it. If sharing my story made it so that one more kid doesn't die, then it'll almost make it okay.
Thank you so much, Sarah.
Thank you. Have a good day.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Mr. Chair, may I comment?
Please.
We shouldn't have to hear those kind of stories here in Oregon. And I know each and every one of us, when we run for office, it's because we want to do the right things for our community. I would hope that everyone on this committee and all of our colleagues in both chambers realize that this issue goes beyond politics, and that we need to pass this legislation because we can, and we can do it, and we can prevent that type of story from happening again. Thank you.
It's important to put a human face on what's happening. We're going to have a great deal of testimony of this. We have 117,000 kids without health insurance. That's a number, but every single one of those is potentially facing the same kind of problems we just heard from Ms. Bacon. It's something that we clearly need to remember. If we have a few minutes for questions, Senator Kotek. Speak up, I can't see everybody here. Well, Senator Kotek, thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you, Mr.
We'll
Chair.
Have lots of opportunity to...
We will.
We have Karen Elliott. Perhaps we can have Jim Lace and... Virginia Santillan, maybe join us all at once to save a little time. Do we have a food person? Well, we're going to start.
Okay, it may be hard to talk after that story. It was very touching. Good morning, Chair Mona Sanderson, Chair Greenlick, and good morning, committee members. For the record, my name is Karen Elliott. I'm representing Oregon Nurses Association, and I serve as a member of the Cabinet on Health Policy for ONA. I've been a nurse for 35 years, working in public health, hospital settings, clinic settings. The majority of my experience has been in maternal child health, but I've had clients from the age of newborn to elderly. I've seen patients who have insurance. I've seen patients who are poorly insured, and way too many patients who have no insurance at all. As a native of Oregonian, I've seen many gray, rainy days here in this state, but today is a bright and sunny day, regardless of the weather outside, although it is sunny today, we're glad to see. It is a wonderful day in Oregon because we're taking huge steps in the direction of a system of affordable health insurance for all children. Today we have a governor and a collection of lawmakers who have vision and courage. You, our elected leaders, are on a path for Oregon to join a small handful of other states who have created a model of universal access for health care for all children. I've waited 35 years for this, and while I've waited, I've seen a lot of things in health care. And some of the things I've seen are parents who delay care for a child who has an ear infection because they have no insurance. They end up in the emergency room with a ruptured eardrum and way sicker than they really need to be. I've seen teens in school settings who may have abscessed teeth or an upper respiratory infection. They need treatment and they have no money to go to the doctor. I've seen new mothers who delay care for their children for well baby checks and immunizations because they have no access to health care. We've had some successes in this state. Our school-based health centers are operating 44 certified sites in 17 different counties, with two more coming on board soon. The school-based health centers are one of the most accessible systems of health care for their clients because they're located exactly where clients go anyway, at their school. These centers meet the medical and psychosocial needs of the underserved population, of one of our most underserved children and teens. The Oregon Health Plan and the federal SCHIP programs are big steps in the right direction. The funding from tobacco tax that allowed expansion of the health care to children at 200% of poverty is also very helpful. But honestly, these landmarks of past successes are much less significant than Senate Bill 31 and House Bill 2201, Healthy Kids Plan. What these bills symbolize, not just for nurses, but for all Oregonians, is a commitment to the next generation, a commitment that says that we care and about these children, that they're important to us, and we will give them an opportunity for a healthy start in life. Because after all, in Oregon, our greatest resource is our children, and it's obviously worth preserving this resource in full health. The ONA nurses applaud this wonderful day, and specifically applaud the elected officials that made it possible. Senator Mona Sanderson, your committee in the interim did a fantastic job. Senator Tina Kotek, and all the members of the Medicaid Advisory Committee, we appreciate your brainchild. And certainly the work of Governor Ted Kulongoski and his staff, who so publicly made this concept part of Oregon's political discourse in 2006, we are grateful. Thank you on behalf of myself and the other 11,000 nurses who are affiliated with Oregon Nurses Association.
Are there any brief questions? Dr. Weiss?
Thank you. Thank you for inviting us to testify today, members of the committee. I'm Jim Lace. I'm a pediatrician here in Salem. I represent the Oregon Medical Association and the Oregon Pediatric Society, and I'm here to testify in favor of Healthy Kids Plan, and would like to offer our support as this gets implemented and we work out the details. You have my written testimony. I'm just going to highlight it and take just a few minutes of your time. You know, the big question comes up, why do you even need a bill like this, and what difference does it make? Who cares if kids are covered by insurances? You know, they can just go to the ER and get their care somewhere else. You've heard testimony here from a mom who lost a child. You've heard testimony from your own constituents who have been in a position where they either been faced with bankruptcy or had some other problem that could have been prevented upstream by having them get access to care. And this is the big issue, I think, here, which is access to care. Our medical system in this state and the country is dollar-driven. I wish it was different. I tend to have more socialistic, you know, approaches to medical care, but that's not going to happen in this country. I can promise you that. And as such, you have to realize that the kids who don't have health insurance, who even the children who are on the Oregon Health Plan, have to compete against those children who have commercial insurance. And as such, if we don't, you know, fess up to that and realize that we have to deal with that openly and honestly, whether you cost shift or however you want to deal, do it. It's a big issue. It's an ongoing issue. Without that access to health care, especially in the first 5 years, for immunizations, for accident prevention, for recognizing developmental disorders, for recognizing children that have, whether it's speech, physical, whatever the problem may be, and having access to deal with them early on before they're 4 or 5 and get into the school system and say, oh my gosh, now what? You know, we've got a child who's not even talking. We do see those kids, unfortunately. Those kids should be recognized early on and dealt with early on and saved, you know, dollars down the way. So it is about access, and it is about, you know, realizing how the system in this state and elsewhere works. You've heard testimony about acute and episodic care in the ERs. Average cost in Salem Hospital ER is $750. Just walk in the doors, and there goes the ka-chink. That same care, if you put that in a clinic, if you put that in an outpatient setting, a doctor's office, you know, with a nurse practitioner, whatever, that can be a tenth of that cost or less. So it does make a big difference. If you have acute and episodic care, what about immunizations? What about preventive care? What about dealing with those children early on who really need to have those other issues addressed, whether it's developmental issues? There's no question that healthy children who start school do better in school. So as a state, we need to recognize that and deal with that and say, we need to pay credits. There's a whole new issue about early brain development that's coming out in the literature. And as such, if we can deal with that, provide those kids a healthy background, whether it's immunizations, accident prevention, putting babies on their back to sleep to prevent sudden infant death syndrome, the list goes on for prevention. That's where it makes a big difference. And that's where the payoff comes later on, because then you're not dealing with this poor gal who went through this horrible thing with her child. And if you can deal with it in an open manner and actually realize that it's going to cost you dollars, and you are recognizing that by the structure of this bill. So I think that's extremely important. The issues of access to regular medical care have been demonstrated over and over again, which is that if you take a diagnosis like asthma, diabetes, some other chronic condition that children can have, if you take the outcomes for those children and measure that at a year, 2 years, 5 years later, the children who have access to regular care, and that means usually they have access to insurance plans, do better than the kids who don't. And as such, that's just a fact. There are numerous studies that have come out. None of them have ever shown the other side, which is you don't need insurance, you're going to do just fine because everybody's going to somehow absorb it. And, you know, they'll do okay, and that's okay. I think if you talk to a lot of people, they say, well, if you don't have insurance, just go to the emergency room, and somehow it's all going to work out. But it doesn't work out the way it should. And just because the emergency rooms are designed for episodic and acute care, they don't look at the bigger issues of the development of the child. They don't look at the bigger issues of what can we do better, you know, for that child. All those ancillary services that I alluded to have to be covered in such a plan. If we're going to have reach out and include children, we don't want to cut off speech therapy. We don't want to cut off occupational therapy, physical therapy. We don't want to cut off funding to CDRC up in Portland for these services. They have to be included in that, and they have to be upfront, and we have to deal with those. The Oregon Health Plan was a great start. We prioritized our care. We looked at what makes sense, what doesn't make sense from a financial standpoint, and just said, okay, gosh, we're not going to afford this. This is a golden opportunity to maybe open up some of those things that we know aren't in children's best interest and say, if we're going to put more money in for children, let's look at some of these other issues, and perhaps we can deal with it, or maybe we can't. I mean, if it's just going to be insuring these kids, keep the Oregon Health Plan the way it is and don't mess that up, okay, we can live with that, you know, as doctors and health providers. But if we want to spend a little extra time as the system gets, you know, rolled out and as we look at these things, we can change some of those things and we can set our priorities a little bit different, I hope. That's just a comment from the medical. I put in here some testimony about the actual plan, the machinery of it, the nuts and bolts. I won't even mention it today. The only plea that I would make is that you have to involve the medical community in the planning and the implementation of this. If you just have a down, you know, we're going to tell you how to do it, the traditional insurance approach, it doesn't work as well. 50% of our newborns here at Salem Hospital are Medicaid eligible. We tend to be a little bit higher than elsewhere around the state. We also have 5 out of the 7 school districts in the state who have 75% or more of the children who are Medicaid eligible. We're disproportionate here, and I realize that, and so what is applicable to Salem is not always applicable to the rest of the state. But it still, I think, mirrors that problem. And we know that these children who are born at Salem Hospital don't always have access. We have 2 pediatric clinics and 2 family practice groups in town that will take Oregon Health Plan. But many other groups in town do not take Oregon Health Plan patients because of the reimbursement issues. We just do it. And we're almost 50% in our clinic that is Oregon Health Plan. So we get on very thin ice sometimes from a financial standpoint. But we still do it, and that's just a side issue. But I just want to, you can read that over and do with it as you want, but I just want to make a plea to make sure that you've involved the medical community in the planning and the implementation of this, because you're more likely to get participation. And I'll close and just say that, you know, the children's health is a measure of the health of a society. I have worked in developing countries around the world, and I get a chance to see other social and medical systems that take place. And when you don't, you can't look at, if you try to separate out children's health and say, oh, don't worry about it, we'll just have more kids, and, you know, on and on and on, it doesn't work that way. You've got to look at kids and say, that's the bellwether, that's the canary in the cave. And if they're having problems, the rest of society is going to have problems because that's the whole future. So I'll stop there and be happy to take any questions.
Time for a brief question. Anybody? I'd like to ask a question,
sure.
Dr. Lace, if I may. Well, you say several of the practices in Salem won't take kids on Medicaid. Will they take kids without any health insurance at all?
I'll tell you what happens in our office. You know, because we are like any other business. I wish it wasn't that way. I wish we could say, oh, don't worry, you know, somebody else is going to pay the electricity, somebody's going to pay the building costs, somebody's going to pay for the help that goes in the office. So what we do is that we absorb those costs. We will work with those families and try to figure out a way that at some point, if they just strictly cannot pay anything at all, at some point, maybe a year later, I tend to be real soft. And actually, when I first started by myself almost 30 years ago, I just said, well, just give us $1 a month or something just to make a token gesture that you're interested in helping that. But the cost of medicine has gone up, and it's very hard to do that anymore. So you do get cost shifting, but typically they don't gain access to the community. You will for a little bit, but at some point it gets cut off, or the families feel embarrassed because they just can't make a payment, and they know that what happens. And so we don't screen people if they call our office and say, do you have insurance or not? We don't base our medical decisions. We can hit those families with a $500 bill just like that. I mean, if they come in, they got a sick child, we need an x-ray, we need to do this, we need to do that. We put them in the hospital, oh my gosh, that's $1,500 just for, you know, going in there for a day, you know, depending upon why they're going in. So, but we don't screen them. We don't ask about their, you know, we like to know their insurance basis, but we still take the patients in. So we don't use that at the front door and say, oh, sorry, you can't come in here at all.
Mr. Chairman.
Dr. Lace, would you explain to me in particular, maybe the rest of the committee, the difference between an insurance model versus a medical model?
You mean in terms of how it gets implemented?
Yes.
What we like to see, we like to be a partner in all these decisions. So we have financial, which is typically more the insurance part. You know, it's like, if for example, if you go to a grocery store and there's somebody standing at the front of the grocery store and you give them a $100 bill, I'm going to do shopping. On the way out, that person is going through your cart and say, sorry, you can't have that. And oh, by the way, you can only spend $80, and I'm going to keep $20 of that to pay for my cost for standing here at the door. That's more of the traditional approach to insurance, and as such, you know, if you involve the physicians and how those decisions get made, you know, what makes sense. The Oregon Health Plan, you try to prioritize care that makes sense, and you get the most, you know, for you can for your dollar. That's where the money issue comes in, how it gets distributed. The medical involves me. You say, does this make sense? Is this worthwhile? What about those kids who are club feet? What do we do them? That's under the line in the Oregon Health Plan, or above the line, depending on how you want to interpret it. We have to go to Shriners. Shriners is free. So we say, great, we've got a fallback for those kids. And so we depend on Shriners for a lot of things, actually. When you get into very special needy children who are very expensive to take care of, they need orthotics, they need specialized, you know, wheelchairs, you know, things for activities of daily living. But because those aren't funded typically, we have to look elsewhere. And so we've learned to adapt to the current system. So that's kind of where you get into the medical stuff. So it's nice to have physicians involved with medical making decisions, which we do in our local group. It's one of the reasons why I bring that out, not to say that's the only solution, but if you involve physicians on a local level, you will get more participation. It's all about access, and access is driven by money, and it's also driven by physicians feeling that they're part of the thing. Not just physicians, but nurses, everybody that's part of the system. And so if you can involve them, just like the Oregon Health Plan did, with planning, looking, talking, community outreach groups, that makes a huge difference. And there's a very different approach, because you feel like, okay, I know that's not going to be covered, but fine, you know, we're going to figure out a way to make it work, and it makes you feel like you want to participate in a more open manner, and not just saying, the door's shut. So we don't want that.
Thanks.
Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
We have Virginia Santilla. And Carrie Jackson, will you join us as well? You're ready.
Chair Mona Sanderson and Chair Greenlee and members of the committee, my name is Virginia Santillan, and I'm a child care provider paid by the state. I am a care provider and a grandmother in support of all children having health care. I have 3 daughters and 10 grandchildren. None of them have health insurance now, but my daughters are working. One of my grandsons has a heart problem, and 2 of my granddaughters suffer from asthma. My daughter Nancy just moved back from Nevada and is trying to figure out if my grandson is eligible for health plan, but it is confusing. She heard if you go off the health plan, you cannot get back on. We're all worried because my grandson is not getting any better. He was born with 2 holes in his heart. His last checkup showed that his lining in his heart is getting thick. He didn't have health insurance last summer, so the whole family pitched in to raise $1,400 for his last checkup. My granddaughters have asthma, also don't have health insurance. Their families don't qualify. Supposedly, they make too much money, but they can't afford to pay for it on their own. They have to decide whether to pay the bills or get insurance. For now, they just pray that Erica and Alyssa don't get sick. I remember one night when Erica woke up and was unable to breathe. My daughter had to take her to the doctor no matter how much the bill will be. When she gets sick, she has to go to the hospital no matter what. All children deserve health care. I ask that you look into your hearts, do the right thing to pass the bill. All children deserve to be seen by a doctor, no matter how much money their parents make. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you coming.
Thank you.
Ms. Jackson?
Senator Mons Anderson, Representative Greenlick, and members of the committee, thank you very much for hearing me today. My name is Carly Jackson, and I work for the Oregon Health Plan, although today I'm here as a private citizen representing my family and children around the state. When I think back over my childhood, I remember that it was difficult. We were always scraping just to get by, but I don't remember lacking for medical care. I remember doctor's visits and numerous emergency room visits. I was a tomboy after all, but my mother never seemed stressed out about it. Well, she set me straight on that recently. My mother made slightly too much money to qualify for Medicaid, but not enough to afford to buy health insurance. So for most of my childhood, my mother worked two jobs. Her full-time job, Monday through Friday, was just enough to barely pay our basic needs. And her job as a cocktail waitress on Friday and Saturday nights paid for premiums for the health insurance that covered my family until she started working for the state. She worked herself to the bone to make sure that we were healthy. Today, however, she would not have had that option. A part-time job on the weekend is not enough to cover health insurance premiums for a family of three. Insurance premiums are so high that families who previously were well off enough to buy their own are now forced to cancel that insurance and hope for the best. I see every day in both my personal and professional life the struggles of parents that as they face decisions about what is best for their children. Too often, those decisions are health care versus food, housing, heat. My family is only a little better off now. My sister is married and has two young children of her own. They can't afford health insurance on their own and make too much money to qualify for the Oregon Health Plan because both she and her husband work full-time, which is why she couldn't be here today. My sister has a credit card that she uses to pay for her family's medical care. It is never paid off, but she feels she's doing fine. However, she lives in fear of accidents and illnesses that might cost them everything that they have worked so hard to build. It's one thing to pay for a physical once a year. It's quite another to be faced with thousands of dollars in medical bills just for a broken arm. It's funny. My sister came to me a few months ago and told me that she had finally paid off the charges for her pregnancy and delivery of my eldest nephew. He's 8 years old. These situations are not unusual. A good portion of my friends and coworkers, as well as myself, are parents struggling to keep children healthy. Most of my coworkers are in their first job with the state. We are the lucky ones, with health insurance for ourselves and our children. Just like me, they previously worked in the private sector, sometimes qualifying for Medicaid, sometimes just getting by and hoping for the best. Now we are all working for the state and have private health insurance, but the struggles are still fresh in our mind, and we are reminded of our past every day. No Oregon child should go without health insurance based on where their parents work. One of the hardest things for me in my job is working emergency applications. These are applications for people with life-threatening and disabling conditions. When I make decisions on those, I can't just send a letter. I have to call the client and tell them what the decision is. If I can approve them, it'll make my day to hear how happy they are. If I'm denying them, especially if it's for a child, their grief is sometimes too much to bear. When I have to say no to a child, sometimes it's a death sentence. I spend my days making what most clients consider life and death decisions for them. Some call me heartless, and some call me hero. Now you have the opportunity to be heroes yourself, to help save the lives of Oregon children.
Yes. Am I here? Are there any questions?
Mr. Chair? I just want to say thank you to both of you for coming. Excellent testimony.
I just want to comment that if there's any question about what a hospitalization costs, I spent a week in the hospital, actually two different weeks. Last week, and the bill came in at $48,000. So your clients are facing that kind of an environment. It must be very difficult to command you.
It is. It is very difficult, and we stand together and try to help each other through it, but it's often a time where we need to go somewhere and have a good cry. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not something we like to do, and it's the part I hate about my job the most, truly is. Mm-hmm. So thank you very much for hearing me today.
Thank you. Thank both of you. We appreciate you coming. Martha Perez? Smith.
Oh, thank you. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Martha Perez. I'm a general activist. For the record, I reside at 920 Northwest Kearney Street, apartment 110 in Portland, Oregon, 97209. Just wanted to thank my ride for the people that have made it possible so I could be here. You have my testimony. I will get to the point. My name is Martha Perez, and I am a loving single parent of a teenage daughter. Excuse me. I am here today to talk about how difficult it is to not have health care for my family. My daughter, Martha, is 15 years old. All her life, I have struggled to provide her with adequate health care. Our family's health insurance has been based on my employment status. Some employers provide insurance, others have not. Even when employers have offered family coverage, I have had to pay extra for it. They usually just cover one person and additional members extra, and have to deal with long waiting periods or have had problems because of other conditions. I just don't think it's fair that my daughter's health should depend on where I'm working, right? Access to health care is something all the kids should have, regardless of who their parents are or where we work. Here's my current situation. Until recently, I worked as a student clerk at the Barnaville Power Administration. I didn't earn a big salary, but I covered the basics, all except health care. It's just too expensive. At the BPA, you have to be generally on the job for 1 year before you get health insurance, and even then it would only cover myself, not my daughter. I lost my job in December of 2006 and have applied for unemployment, and I'm working to find another job suitable. At least temporarily, with no income, my family is reapplying for the Oregon Health Plan. There is a gap in coverage. The simple things like dental appointments and the physical checkups, they have to wait. I actually had to reschedule them all the way to March. So try explaining that to a teenage daughter who wants health care now, who needs it because she's a young woman and her health care needs are complicated. I live in dread that my daughter will experience complications before she's covered. If anything happens, I have no way to pay it. I don't have any savings. I can't afford a healthcare crisis right now. I am, of course, worried about my own, you know, lack of healthcare coverage, but I'm more worried about my daughter. She's just starting out. It would break my heart to see her dragged down by any type of problem. Just this testimony was just, it's compelling, right? I worry about this all of the time. Like many women in similar situations, I do live on the edge of my seat. I'm waiting for some money from child support, financial aid, and the earned income credit to arrive in time to pay the bills, which are piling up fast. It does take a long time for the money to come. I'm just afraid it won't arrive on time. Thank you for your patience. I wish that there was more support for families in our community. It's just so hard to be a parent these days. I look around at my friends and my neighbors and see that they are doing their best to work hard and take care of their children. Healthcare is a little tricky, though. Even if you're doing everything right, your kids still might be uninsured. There's not much that a parent can do in that situation because the system is so much bigger than one person than even one family. That's why I'm here today, to give my support for anything you can do to help families like mine. I'm not asking for a handout. I just need a hand up, just a little bit of help with our health care. Regular health insurance policies are so expensive that families like mine could never really hope to pay the full price. And frankly, I need to know that somebody is listening and cares about me and my daughter. If someone won't, then who will? Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any questions for Ms. Perez?
Any questions, anybody? We're moving on?
Nicely done.
Thank you very
much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Charles and Jack Hollywood. It's actually Charles and Charles, right?
It's Charles and Charles, yes, sir.
Welcome. Please introduce yourself.
Good morning, Governor Kulongoski and members of the House and Senate Healthcare Committees. My name is Charles Hollywood II, and this is my father, Charles Hollywood Sr. My father is a Vietnam veteran and served as a medic from 1968 to 1960. from 1967 to 1968, and he received an honorable discharge from the United States Armed Forces. He was a medic in the military and a paramedic in civilian life. He's able to get his health care through the VA and Social Security. My mother and I cannot get coverage through the VA, but we are covered through the Oregon Health Plan. My father brought me here today because he's concerned for my health and what he feels is inappropriate action about how decisions are made about for providing health care in our state, particularly for when it comes to children.
Good morning, Governor and members of the House and Senate Health Committee. Jack's mother, Wanda, used to be a supervisor for a janitorial service and had health insurance that was fully paid for by her employer. After her accident, she was employed through the Workforce Development Program with the Department of Human Services for almost a year, which provided coverage through the Oregon Health Plan. While she was at DHS, Wanda, Jack's mother, saw case after case of families requesting assistance for medical care for a child. As a mother and as someone who saw parents without health insurance desperately seeking help for their children, she worried for those children and their families, as so do I. We are grateful for the OHP plan and are better off than thousands of other Oregon families who cannot afford any insurance. Our son Jack suffers from chronic fluid in the ear, sometimes called swimmer's ear, which has led to several painful ear infections. He has received treatment for several years. During that time, he has endured multiple courses of antibiotics and eventually underwent a CAT scan to try to determine the cause of the fluid buildup. After months of examination and testing, his doctors have recommended surgery to remove his adenoids, drain the fluids in his ear, start repairing the damage to his hearing. But the OHP wants to wait and have him undergo yet another course of antibiotics. 2 months, as a matter of fact. 10 days is your normal run for a child. They tend to build a tolerance after that, an immunity to the drug. And it's a drug that I feel and most people feel is very important to keep from building an immunity to, so that as you go through life, you can use this drug. It's the best drug that we have at our arsenal. OHP wants to give them this 2 month antibiotic course and then see how he's doing, and we have no idea how that's going to work. In the meantime, Jack is in constant pain. My son had perfect hearing about 6 months ago. He has lost almost all his hearing in his right ear, and we have filed an appeal with our plan provider and are waiting for them to decide on whether to honor the recommendation of Jack's own physicians, but they have given us no indication as to when that will happen. Our son is in the fourth grade. Right now, he reads on an eighth grade level and performs at seventh grade level math. His teachers are aware of his hearing loss and are making accommodations for him, but this is a critical time in his education and development. We don't want to see our son in pain, and no longer do we want to worry that he will fall behind in school due to his hearing loss that could be treated right now. Jack has already had to deal with other medical problems in his young life, and having to go through this process is an added burden. For us as parents, it is very hard to deal with the fact that if we could afford to pay for more comprehensive insurance, Jack could be free of pain and have his hearing restored in a very short period of time. We are grateful for the coverage we do have through OHAP. In our son's case, though, his treatment plan, which was recommended by both his regular physician and a specialist, was denied by the same plan, and we just cannot afford to pay out of pocket for the care that his doctors believes he needs. Medical care for children, as we know, that when children don't have health insurance, they usually end up going to the emergency room for care, which we have done on numerous occasions, which is extremely expensive place. And then, as parents, we try to get help, but it's about the only place we can go. And we don't have when we don't have this insurance is the emergency room. And as you know, one trip to the hospital, sir, is more than many families can afford. And when those bills come due, and as parents we can't pay them, then they get turned over to collection agencies. This is no way to treat our children or our working families. It's not easy for any parent to talk about this issue because we love our kids and take responsibilities to provide for them very seriously. It's heartbreaking for the parents to see their children suffering, but it's devastating to know that you could help ease their pain if you could afford to pay for insurance. Our state needs a simple plan to help all parents afford and keep good health care for all our children. So even though this program is called, Healthy Kids, it's not just good for our kids, it's good for us too as parents. It's good for our state and our country. As adults, we understand that procedures must be followed and choices must be made. But from where we sit as parents, it feels more like cruel and unusual punishment to deny preventative care or recommended treatment to any child simply because the cost of health insurance is out of reach. We try so hard to provide for our children, and we want them to have everything they need to be safe, happy, and healthy. Parents who work hard and love their children should not be forced to choose between buying medicine or paying the rent, or deciding we need to pay for food and utilities rather than purchasing health insurance. Healthy Kids would help all parents make sure that their children would have the coverage they need. As parents and as family, we urge you to put Oregon children's first and help their parents help them. Please support the Healthy Kids plan. I'd like to turn this back over and let my son read a brief note that he wrote. He seems to speak better than I do.
Dear Governor Kulongoski, I do not feel good about my ears. I cannot hear very well. I wish they would be fixed. Signed, Jack Harlow II. Date 1-21-07. Back to you, Charles.
Yeah, another problem besides health insurance. Yes. Please.
First of all, thank you, Mr. Chair. To Mr. Hollywood Sr., I'd like to thank you for your service to this country. And to Jack, I'd like to say you did an excellent job with your testimony. This is hard sometimes even for grown-ups to come and sit here, and you did a very good job. I know I'll be remembering you as we consider this bill, and I think the others here who listen to you will as well, and I hope you get extra credit in school for being here today.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair. Jack, I also wanted to thank you for coming today. It's a brave thing to sit in front of a bunch of representatives and senators and to write a note to the governor. I don't know many fifth graders that would be willing to do that. And you've done something very important today, and you're going to help kids all across the state. And I've heard you. I think we've heard you. And I hope that we follow up by passing this bill so that your ears can feel better and your classmates can feel better, too.
Senator Gordon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hollywood, I too, we all thank you for your service, Vietnam-era veteran. Thank you for your service. and to Jack Jr., look at these chairs up here and pick out your future.
I don't know which one.
The middle one, yeah.
That's the right one. Thank you both very much.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Have a good night.
Okay. Betty House. Senator, would you like to comment with me?
I'm going to, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to have to leave at 11:20 to go convene the floor session for the Oregon Senate, which is scheduled to start at 11:30. So I hope you'll allow me to be excused, Mr. Chair Lonis Anderson, Chair Greenlick.
I'm very happy to be excused. If there's any comment you'd like to make preliminary, although you have lots of time before we're done.
No, that's the comments I think should be made from here today, if you don't mind me saying so. So I defer to those who've come to testify.
Thank you very much, sir.
You've given me a hard act to follow here, as any teacher would tell you. Today I'm representing a different group than some of you who know me usually see me with that hat on. Chair Lonis Anderson and Chair Greenlick, I'm Betty McChesney House, and I'm representing Delta Kappa Gamma Society International. Delta Kappa Gamma International is a professional society of women educators. The society promotes excellence in education. It is from that mission that I testify today. Our organization is made up of women educators, both retired and active, who have achieved academic excellence in our business is to give our communities the brightest, best-educated young adults that we can. We therefore have a vested interest in children's health and the availability of medical services. All school staff works together for this outcome. From the cleaning of the classroom to seeing that a nutritional lunch is served, our entire day is spent on our future citizens and leaders. Sick kids don't learn, and we all lose. Healthy children are ready to learn and develop skills necessary to succeed in life. It is our greatest wish with all our students to come to us eager and capable of learning to read, write, and do math and develop problem-solving skills. We are all aware that a healthy child is a happy child. However, no parent wants to be in a situation where they must choose between food and medical services for their child. Health services are one piece of a child's future we can give to them today. We are the only industrialized nation that does not have children's health and welfare as its number one priority. It is hardly mentioned on the nightly news, or when it is, a foundation or other group trying to see that children are taken care of. Our members have loved their jobs as professional educators. We want all children to succeed and have wonderfully successful lives. Unfortunately, we cannot do it alone. To educate those bright young growing minds, we need healthy bodies and life situations. We cannot fault a sick child or one that cannot hear, as the little boy that was just here testified, all the instructions or to see the board. But we can take the initiative to remedy the situation through good medical care. It is important to do early screening of vision and hearing problems so they can be resolved and the child will not be left behind. Now, I'd like to add to that, I was part of my career was spent as a special education teacher. And we can, if the child is blind, have their books and things put into Braille for them. But again, there has to be a teacher there that teaches them how to use them and what Braille is. However, the child that has a vision deficiency where they do not see anything when it's printed black on green or red or shades thereof, we don't know until the screening is done. And then we can remedy it. But otherwise, the teacher many times thinks at Christmas or, you know, that time of year, it's wonderful to print some of the activities and instructions on green paper. And here you have a child, and if you're unaware of that, they cannot read it or see what is on that paper. These things can all be resolved in the course of a child's education, and we've done marvelous things about changing kids in classrooms and all types of technology. But the problem here is, if we don't know it, we can't even start to solve it. So, thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions?
Thank you again.
Is Karen Fergie?
Yours is coming to you in a smaller font than mine. My name is Karen Fergie. I'm a registered nurse and with the Oregon Federation of Nurses and Health Professionals and AFT Healthcare. I'm here testifying today to you because of the healthcare crisis in this country. Too many children in this country are without healthcare. I see the impact every day in both my professional and my personal life. My 29-year-old daughter has two friends that have children and cannot afford health insurance for themselves or their children. They're both living in homes where at least one parent is working. They bring their sick children to me for evaluation because they cannot afford to go to the doctor's office when their kids are ill. They rely on me for information, medical advice, and advice on when their children must go to see the doctor. When they need to see the doctor, they go to the emergency room because they cannot be turned away for inability to pay for their care. If these children needed to be hospitalized, it would break these families. They could not afford the care, but of course would go without food or other necessities to get their child what they need. I wonder what other parents in Oregon do when they do not have medical insurance for their children and they don't know a nurse that they can call. I fear for them. When I worked in a small hospital here in the Willamette Valley, the doctors would send us backdoor patients. We literally snuck them in the back door of the hospital to give them the care that they needed. Very often, they paid for that care with a chicken. These families could not afford their health insurance for their children, but their children needed hospital care. We cared for these patients off the books because their care, their lives depended upon their care. My husband is also a small business owner. He has many employees who have children. The cost of health care for families is so high that my husband cannot afford to pay for coverage for the employees' children, only the employees. This is upsetting for both my husband and his employees. They're good, hard-working people who must make real sacrifices to have health insurance for their children. I do not know how they will be able to continue to have health insurance if the cost of health care continues to rise. Please seriously consider the legislation before you. It's a matter of urgency for the children that are uninsured in this state. It is a matter of life and death for many of them. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Thank you for coming to us. We're a bit ahead of schedule. We have time for some preliminary comments if anybody would like to have that. We'll be back with a full slate of testimony on Wednesday and perhaps again on Friday. But anybody feels compelled to share something with us, this is the time. Okay.
This is a quiet group, Mr. Chair. For the senators, we will be meeting here. We will not be meeting at a regular time, but we will be meeting at 10 o'clock on Wednesday, and we're also scheduled to meet at 10 o'clock on Friday here. And so with that, I'm sorry, on Friday we were meeting at 3 o'clock. Yes, I knew that. All right. So I would like to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 31, and I would like to adjourn the Senate.
I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2201 and adjourn the House Committee on Health Care.